Hi, my name is Zoja Zachariasdotter and this is my channel Modiga Människor, which means brave people. And you actually watch show number 82. This is a Christmas special, a gift from us to you. And I'm so happy that Dr. Shankara Chetty and Dr. Marcel Westerlund wants to do this actually on Christmas Eve. Before we start, I just want to remember you that the best thing you can do to support this show is to share it with everybody you know, or support it with a donation. There is information in the text underneath. And now I want to introduce these two fantastic doctors, Dr. Shankara Chetty and Dr. Marcel Westerlund.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone, and happy Christmas to all of you.
Hi. Fantastic.
Hi, Zoya, and to your guests. Thank you for having me again. I'm glad to be here. And happy holidays to all your patrons.
Yeah, and I'm just so happy that we could arrange this. I mean, on Christmas Eve and just before you came in, Dr. Marcel and I spoke about this. Oh, here we are on Christmas Eve. And I said, I mean, what's the best gift we can actually give people? I mean, with the knowledge from you two, and share it with others. So,
Surely.
Yeah, and can we just, I mean, not everybody has seen your, the last show, I mean, not everybody knows about you, Dr. Shankara. You have saved over 8,000 people. From going to hospital, or I mean, they are still alive, obviously. So you did something right.
I'm a general practitioner in a small town, but I serve a wide diversity of people, and I've been treating COVID patients from the start of the pandemic. I used my science background to try and gain some understanding in what's going on. And I think that's helped me in fine-tuning the type of treatment I use to save lives.
Well, that's fantastic. And you, Marcel, Dr. Marcel, you just very recently, 2 months ago, you came from New Zealand.
So... Yes. I've been working there as a head of department in both general psychiatric setting and forensic setting. And I also had the pleasure to be imprisoned by the government of New Zealand as a traveler to New Zealand. So I've been isolated 2 times, 2 weeks each, under very harsh conditions, particularly the last one where we were treated really like criminals. And so I've seen that side as well. I'm not the expert, Dr. Chetty is, when it comes to treatment, but I do think I could potentially provide some insights into what all this is doing to us. And first, I would like to stretch out to each one of you out there and say that there's always hope. We do not need to fear death because we have accepted to live, and then we have accepted death itself. But that said, this sort of pandemic or plandemic, if we put it that way, has instilled the worst virus in so many people, and that is fear. And as I said in the first interview, the mass formation of people into long lines of people believing everything they're fed with has caused a lot of issues. And of course, some people are now starting to wake up because they notice that those jabs didn't work. I need a third. And even in Israel, you're getting the fourth. And so it is really important that, from my perspective as a psychiatrist, as they call it in the ancient Egypt, the healer of the heart. We really need to heal the heart, apart from also healing people from illnesses. And what has been the worst case, and Dr. Chetty will comment on that, is that many people have been prohibited from proper treatment that has been available worldwide. And I think that would be one of the first steps or issues to discuss, why people wouldn't have access to proper treatment. We wouldn't deny people treatment if they came with other issues like heart conditions or pneumonia or measles or and so forth. But suddenly it was prohibited to provide hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin or other treatment options. And I think that is really important to discuss.
Hmm. And I think it's actually a very good combination with you two. I mean, you have the experience of treating a lot of patients, and you have your experience, Marcel. I mean, you've been traveling around the world twice and really see what this is doing, and you have your expertise and like you told us the last time I interviewed you, that really shaked me up. But when people are coming to the hospital, in your case, and not taking the shot, you're treated like a criminal.
Yeah. And I would also like to mention that a lot of people have chosen not to take the jab. And my South African secretary lost a job, an excellent lady, because refused. And she has no money. And she writes to me almost every day and say, I live now in poverty in New Zealand. And this is, frankly speaking, unbelievable. When I was in isolation shortly after, a South African doctor, a lady with her husband was incarcerated for 2 weeks with three children in a room around 8 square meters. She became depressed, and shortly after they were released, she killed all her three children. And I think that is a good evidence of what is going on. And all these issues is not only the virus and the treatment, is the impact of mental health worldwide, an increase of suicide, increase of poverty, increase of crime, and an increase of drug use. It is, frankly speaking, absolutely horrifying.
Hmm. Yeah. So we need to kind of saw this wave together. And I started when I talked to you, Shankara, that you will have a holiday. I thought, of course. And you said that there is no holiday. And I guess that you're going to work a lot.
I'll have to work through the holidays. I think I'm used to it. People tend to misbehave during the holiday season, and I'm always here to pick up the pieces. So I've gotten used to that. But, we're sitting with the Omicron variant now in South Africa. Yeah. And I've been inundated with patients over the past 3 weeks odd. And so certain patients are going to have a crisis this weekend. I've advised them of it, picking on the 8th day. And so I've got to make myself available to them. So I'm not going to have staff around me, but I'm going to have to find a way to do this myself.
Dr. Chetty, since Omicron was discovered by one of your colleagues in South Africa, your view on this Omicron would be much appreciated by the world, but because it is said to be less dangerous and easier to treat than the previous so-called COVID. Could you comment on the Omicron and the impact of this new so-called virus on the world, and that we're all now going into lockdowns and further restrictions and vaccine passports?
With this variant, I've been seeing it now for the past 3 weeks. I've been through over a good couple of hundred patients with it. It presents with a headache and fatigue and a very transient sore throat. for about a day or so. And a majority of patients by about the third or fourth day start to show signs of good recovery. I've noticed that we're seeing a few breakthroughs in patients who were infected with COVID before. However, those breakthrough infections are very mild, very transient. It's almost an upgrade to their software rather than anything more serious than that. But the noticeable feature of this Omicron is that it seems to target vaccinated people. I think about 70% of my clientele that are getting Omicron are fully vaccinated, some of them even with a booster dose of vaccine. So it seems to be evading the vaccine immunity pretty easily. With Omicron itself being a very mild variant, we haven't had any hospitalizations or deaths to speak of. A lot of the hospitalizations that were diagnosed were incidental. Those patients were there for other reasons and tested positive. And so they were reported as COVID cases in hospital, but they weren't there for, they were there with COVID rather than from COVID. So we're dealing with a very mild variant, and I think there's absolutely no reason for us to be fearful of it. If I had to consider, a recovery from Omicron seems pretty simple and will confer even greater, wider immunity than a vaccine could. So an Omicron infection is actually better than a vaccination because the risk of mortality and morbidity is almost non-existent.
And I'm really glad you say that, because I have stated many times, and my colleagues in our international network with researchers and specialists, having the COVID infection for most people is actually a blessing, because you will have a lifelong immunity. Professor Dolores Cahill, during a meeting yesterday evening, stated that she is a bit suspicious about the PCR tests, and that it could very well be that an increasing number of PCR tests shown positive coincides with a high number of people being vaccinated. And she also stated that it seems that when they go through the research database, that the high level of COVID infections last year seemed to coincide with the influenza peak that should normally have been the case, but influenza was almost non-present. And yet now suddenly influenza seems to appear in Sweden. So there's a lot to be said. And she said that they need to also address the PCR technology, which is unreliable. And they make so-called runs, how many times they run this in order to prove that the client is positive. 45 runs, and the more number of runs, the higher likelihood that you will turn out positive, because the test will pick up some genetic material, not necessarily from Omicron or COVID or anything else. It could be something else. So she said that the number of runs should be reduced, because otherwise test will be false positive. And so this is really important, and I finish off by saying, and a girl from New Zealand went to a lab in London prior to her departing last year, and she turned out positive. Well, she couldn't leave, but she was a smart little girl, so she went to another lab and she turned out negative. And that shows that it's about number of runs, and we have to be very careful. And finally, Dr. Professor Cahill stated, if you turn out positive, it should be further investigated with immunoassay, a specific test, and sequencing, which cost roughly around $100, in order to actually confirm that you have the virus. And in most cases, that just does not happen.
Yeah, that's exactly true. The PCR tests are very unreliable. I've seen that myself. The PCR test, and I think more telling, Marcel, is that the PCR test formed the basis of our public health intervention. And our public health intervention required certain things to be non-negotiable for it to be successful. The two arms of the public health intervention was isolations, lockdowns, quarantines, track and trace. So our aim with that was to find the virus and isolate it so that it couldn't spread. And then the second arm of our public health intervention was vaccines against infection. And both, I think, were destined to fail from the start. From the perspective of vaccines, we've never been able to make a vaccine for a mutagenic RNA virus. We've tried this with the flu virus every year. So we've never managed to get good efficacy out of those vaccines. So I can't understand why we chose that as our primary public health intervention. And from the perspective of isolation, lockdowns, that kind of thing, we've never in human history been able to isolate and the spread of a respiratory virus that actually is now found to be aerosol-based. So that was destined to fail from the start. And if you look at the PCR test lent to the failure of these public health interventions and to a lot of the manipulation of unreliable data. So the PCR test was the basis of all the data that we have. And it was, I think, deliberately unreliable to fit any narrative that came, you know, that came by. The PCR test, if you wanted to succeed in the public health strategy, then you would have had to isolate every single person with this virus so that you'd prevent its spread. Now, it's like trying to isolate two black grains of rice in a white bowl of rice. To do that, you need speed and you need good eyesight. Unfortunately, the eyesight given to us was a faulty PCR test. So you would never isolate those grains of rice before they spread. And I think slowly we're finding out that the isolation measures were actually absolutely a monumental failure. Here in South Africa, we estimated from the PCR testing that we'd have about 30 to 40% of South Africans that have had COVID already. But then when we looked at the antibody testing, a broad survey of antibody testing, we found that almost 80% of South Africans had antibodies. So there's about 40% who've had COVID that are unaccounted for, who are never isolated, who are never locked down, who are never quarantined. So where's the point? You can't isolate the pee in the swimming pool. If you're dealing with the test that's non-discerning, you can't tell the pee from the water. And there's no point even going down that road.
And I find that interesting. If we look at the from the perspective of history, I've studied Egyptology and a few other things as well. And the pestilence, the Gedulian pestilence, 541 after Christ, and the Black Death, 1346 A.D. And the last one killed between 30 to 40% of the population. Was really a pandemic. The word pandemic is being used without even considering its value. And the pandemic was actually, the meaning of pandemic was changed by the WHO recently, so it would fit their narrative. And we also need to remember when they declare a pandemic, they don't need to refund those institutions and people that have funded the WHO itself. And that is important. So there is also that issue as well, the financial issue, but also the fact that we have isolated healthy people for the first time throughout our so-called known history of 6,000 years or a bit more, perhaps. And now we are isolating healthy people like myself, traveling around the globe twice, isolated twice, and tested up to 15 times and with these so-called PCR tests. And I think that is shows you all out there that this is far bigger than just this so-called virus.
So I have a question to you, Marcel, because you have been traveling so much. Is there a difference in the PCR test? I mean, as soon as someone is sick at school, they call it like utbrott, outbreak. From what I heard, I haven't been traveling like you, but from what I heard is that most people who get tested at the airport still can go on the plane.
Yeah, and I would like to quote Professor Dolores Kay from yesterday. It was actually discussed with the international network, and she said that some of the manufacturers of these so-called tests previously went out of business because their biological test kit was actually unclean. And we know that has happened as well. Dr. Chetty, you might comment. And there was a lot of false positives and, of course, false negatives, because this is just more than PCR. It's about a big business. And Carl is Mullis himself, who received a Nobel Prize for his PCR technology in 1993, mentioned that this is unreliable, should not be used in clinical settings.
But even if you go into the Swedish Folkhälsomyndighetens page, it says that you can't use this test for a virus. It says there. I mean, on the Swedish healthcare government, but still people use this test. And it should ring so many bells. And that
even the even the manufacturer's leaflet for the test does not recommend that it be used for screening for diagnosis. It should not be used on asymptomatic patients. It should be used only during a certain period of the illness for it to be reliable. So there are different factors that improve the reliability of the test. But all those factors have been ignored completely.
Yeah, well, you can.
And also to to make things worse, now we have countries like New Zealand having introduced a new amendment to their COVID bill, which means that when I left, the people would be incarcerated and they would be forced to be tested with a kit that is unreliable. Then they would be forced to be vaccinated. And they would be kept in isolation in a specific government unit. We have countries now like Ecuador today, Austria, and New Zealand that have decided to force vaccination on the population. And we need to remember that is on the basis of a test kit that is by many means. I mean, most scientists would agree that is completely unreliable.
And still we use it. And that brings me into the next question, this mass formation psychosis. Oh. I mean, there's no other word.
Yeah. No, I did comment to Dr. Chetty about this last time, and mass formation, about a sense of isolation among people, you know, and increasing anxiety, and then something turns up and gives you meaning, and you comply. And in our country, Sweden, Swedes have generally had a great deal of trust and belief in their government and obedience to authority, as it was called by Milgram in his research in 1963. There's a lot of obedience, but I think it's changing since people realize you don't need two shots, you need three, four, five. You know, you're gonna, and your vaccine passports are gonna expire after 6 months. We know that the latest research shows that Moderna's vaccine lasts around four months. Pfizer's last maybe 6 to 7 months. So you will need a booster. So there's a lot of issues around.
Yeah, I think it's the mass formation psychology also requires the persistence of fear for it to be effective. And now that we're seeing the inconsistencies, people are waking up from that state of hypnosis very slowly. And so more and more, people are realizing that it doesn't make sense. When you look at mass formation, it borders on religion, totalitarianism. They scare people. Once you're fearful enough, and it's got to be a foe that you, an irrational fear, so a foe that you cannot see. And then you've got to keep population very confused all the time, so they have nothing to really hold on to. So I think Dr. Fauci was instrumental in that. wear a mask and then don't wear a mask and then wear two masks and then isolate and you don't need to isolate, and it kept changing. So we like constancy as human beings, and we like to know what's going to happen tomorrow. And when they took that away, we started to lose faith, especially when you lose your job and then you put into a crisis situation. When we lose faith and with fear, we don't make good decisions. But the vaccine was held up very early on in all this as our savior. So people were looking forward to the vaccinations getting us back to normal. And that was punted from the start, that the vaccine's the only thing that will get us back to normal. And so people latch onto it like it's their savior. And so the vaccine now is almost religion. It's got a cult-like following. People are fanatical about it. We're not allowed to discuss it anymore because it brings up too much of hatred and animosities. So I think this was all pre-planned. The people that are doing this understand the psychology of the planet very well. But with us that haven't really been hypnotized by this, we sit with a difficult situation in that when you deal with people afflicted by this kind of mass psychology, sometimes the harder you push, the harder they go into that hypnosis. And you've got to be very careful about how you address it. So you just got to keep speaking truth, and hopefully a little bit of logic sinks in and that changes their perspective. They wake up. But I think a lot that's happening is nonsensical, and people are slowly understanding that something's amiss.
And we have also noticed in Sweden that the government are now trying to targeting all the immigrants, because immigrants in Sweden, from particularly the Middle East and Afghanistan, Somalia and other countries, are much more, and rightly so, suspicious about authorities, and they are more reluctant to get the jab and take it. So we have at least 1.5 million people who haven't taken the jab, and so they're going to push now and call it a vaccine week. You know, it sounds like a commercial on TV, and they're going to push this. But the two most important agendas, which was discussed yesterday with our Swedish specialist network and the international network, was two things: the vaccine passport and jabbing kids between the age of 5 to 12, which actually goes strictly against any science and all we know as doctors, against the Hippocratic Oath not to do harm, and it goes against the Nuremberg Code, which clearly stated, following the Nazis' terrible Holocaust of people and Jews, the Nuremberg Code states that by no means can any person be subject of medical research on the premises of trying something and finding out and by force and coercion, which was the case with Jews and also Chinese prisoner wars under Japanese rule. There were many, many of them that died during these experiments. So that we are now going to jab our kids will have enormous repercussions. But that's the agenda, and that's what we as a network, both nationally and internationally, are strictly, strictly against.
So what can we do? I mean, the kids, I mean, it breaks my heart. And we are there. They're pushing this agenda towards.
So what is your view, Dr. Chetty? What are we going to do about this agenda? Are we going to jab the kids? In England, nurses get £10 for each kid they jab.
Yeah. Look, I think South Africa, we are in a very unique situation. We're a new democracy. So we're not very trusting of our politicians as yet. We're in a country where there's a lot of corruption and collusion. We've seen a lot of theft in government itself. So we're very skeptical of the leaders that are in power, and a healthy skepticism. And so we don't trust what we're told very easily. And I think that has bode well. I don't think I would have said this before, but I'm actually thankful for governmental incompetence, The vaccine rollout's been too slow. They've managed not to get to all of us. I don't think we could issue passports to everyone. It's too disorganized to go down that road. So I think we're well placed. And from a population perspective, we're a rainbow nation. We've got a diversity of people all in the same country. So there's absolutely no uniformity and consistency in South Africa. And being a fledgling democracy, I think we're willing to stand up and fight for our rights. And that's, I think, very different in that when I look at the Western democracies, I think they've become complacent in their leaderships and trust them too much. And now they find themselves in this situation. So our president does seem to lean towards mandating a vaccine, but he knows if he leans too far, he might fall. And so he's a bit cautious about how he articulates his plans. I think he watches very closely these political swings with every word that comes out of his mouth. And I think that's a good thing in South Africa. And as well, we have a diversity of academic institutions. We've dealt with communicable diseases for a very long time. So we have a large diversity of acumen when it comes to this kind of research. So yes, a lot of it has been funded by the big companies and has been coerced in a particular direction. But I've noticed over the last few months that research facilities as well are changing direction, starting to look more discreetly and discerningly at the vaccines itself. We're starting to understand the harm that it causes. We have a lower socioeconomic population group that is very skeptical of vaccines, and there's been very poor uptake. They've been victims of collusion as well and coercion into taking the vaccines. They've also seen the side effects. We've had a lot of old people pass away after the vaccines in the rural areas where they were coerced into taking it just to get their pensions or to get the their monthly chronic medication. And they ended up with strokes and heart attacks and all these side effects that we see. So people are very skeptical about the vaccines in the low socioeconomic groups, and that's a very large part of our population. And of course, they're feeling the pinch with the economic shutdowns that we've had. And so South Africa is a country that it doesn't take much for us to rise and start to fight for our freedoms again. So we've got a healthy movement here in South Africa, not anti-vaccination, but pro-freedom of choice. So once this vaccine starts to take away our freedoms of choice, I think we're going to see a country rise.
And I would also like to mention that when we talk about children between the age of 5 to 12, a recent study published has clearly shown that young boys are particularly vulnerable due to myocarditis. Mm-hmm. We know that from Japan, but also a number of other countries, as I previously mentioned. I had two colleagues in New Zealand that both developed heart conditions, pericarditis, and long-term heart issues, which is horrible. And we know that those boys that are young, that develop myocarditis, 13% of those will have long-term issues with the heart failure, and they're less likely to have a long life. So those are issues. We are actually doing this to help the children. They don't die from this. Most of them don't even develop any symptoms. They are so-called asymptomatic carriers. And so it is an incredibly important issue when we talk about the children.
The children shouldn't have even factored into this at all. I've seen hundreds of kids with COVID, and I haven't had a single child progress into the second phase of this illness. The second phase of COVID, where all the mortality and morbidity reside, is a hypersensitivity-triggered inflammatory process that starts a week after the onset of illness. Now, children's immune systems are very immature, and so they don't have the propensity to mount such a disastrous immune response. So they're not at risk at all. So we're protecting them from something that doesn't actually occur in children, an immune response that doesn't occur in children. And we're vaccinating them against a virus that is actually relatively mild and self-limiting in children. So we got to weigh benefit against risk, and the risk far outweighs any benefit this vaccine could provide them. And I think coercing parents into thinking that vaccinating their children will protect the family is the most terrifying thing that I've seen people try to do. This has almost biblical proportions, where we see parents give up their children to sacrifice for the protection of the herd. That never happens. Children are always the center of our protection. We never sacrifice them for the protection of any other segment of the society. And that's what we seem to be doing now. I thought that ancient rituals of child sacrifice were long gone from civilization, but it doesn't look that way.
Mm. Yeah, but it's so terrible. And we have a media, and our government is also, they're really information, giving information to all of us all the time. So I hear from everybody that it's the children. It's the children who are the carrier of this so-called virus. And even if they aren't sick, they are giving it to other people. So they really, they did a good job in this mass formation psychosis to scare people.
Zoya, what they're not telling you is that the dog is also a carrier. So are we going to go now with our pets? It's we will live with COVID. Yeah. This is not something that we will vaccinate our way out of. COVID will become, coronavirus will become endemic. And that's where we got to aim. You know, with Omicron, it's a mild illness. And it makes a beautiful live attenuated vaccination for the planet, because it'll spread very quickly. It'll displace the more pathogenic variants. It will not cause the mortality and morbidity. And we'll be blessed with a wide, diverse, natural immune response. So when you look at Omicron, it's actually a good live attenuated vaccine. Now, at the start of this pandemic, it was a joke with all my patients, because I made it clear with every one of them that they would probably, by the end of this pandemic, have gotten a strain of coronavirus. They wouldn't be able to avoid getting COVID. It was only a matter of time. So the laugh was, I would always tell them, you're going to get COVID. Just choose your variant very carefully. And now with Omicron in the picture, when they come to me, I said, well, you seem to have done well. Chose your variant correctly. But there's no reason for us to fear. It's the fear that's causing all the problem. Yeah. And like Marcel said, the early treatment would take away all the mortality and morbidity from this illness. So we've artificially engineered the mortality and morbidity to justify a mass vaccination campaign that even for over 70-year-olds was wholly unnecessary. So now that we're talking of vaccinating kids, we've actually gone too far.
And I would also like to comment a little bit about risks. These manufacturers of the vaccine, of course, they boast about the efficacy rates between 67% to 95%. And we talk about risk reduction. But the real absolute risk reduction has been estimated to be only between 0.7% and 1.3%. And that should be seen in light of the incredible risks when we vaccinate small children that doesn't show any symptoms whatsoever. And as some mentioned, should we vaccinate these small children because there is an idea about protecting elderly people in care homes?
You see, when we look at the risk reduction as well, I think we must be very cautious that they're not giving us the broad view of things. So when you quote the relative risk reduction, it's relative to what the risk is without the vaccine. But it doesn't look at the small risk that the illness actually poses on the grander scheme of things. So you're making a negligible risk smaller. That's all you're doing. Someone with the Omicron variant, a lot of countries closed their borders and rushed off to vaccinate their citizenry. And that is the most nonsensical thing I ever seen done. And I was talking about this to a colleague, and I said, why would you vaccinate someone against a mild illness? Omicron does not cause severe illness nor death. The vaccine advertises itself as preventing severe illness and death, but obviously Omicron doesn't need that protection because it doesn't cause severe illness and death. And the obvious, seeing that Omicron only causes mild illness, the vaccine doesn't protect you against mild illness. So there's no logic in saying that you're going to vaccinate people for severe illness and death when this doesn't cause that. And then one colleague said, oh, but the boosters have shown to reduce this by reduce the incidence of illness by 50%. But 50% of zero is still zero. So I still don't understand why you need to reduce a risk that's non-existent at a very high cost to that patient. You might not reduce any risk of illness, but the risk of side effects will always be there. And especially with the young population who you're vaccinating with a vaccine that you have no long-term safety data on. That's a complete
We need to remember that most people are probably not aware about the fact that 3 weeks following the first shot, you are considered non-vaccinated, and 2 weeks following the second shot. That means that from a manufacturer perspective, anything happening there is not caused by the vaccine. I was a bit shocked when returning to Sweden after years as an international doctor. And last week, I was told at this specific ward where I was taking care of patients that I went through their medical files and records and noticed that most of them actually had been tested positive for COVID. And then I noticed that they also had been jabbed. And I asked the nurses, why have you jabbed people who have fully recovered from the virus? And she said, well, we were told, jab them all, doesn't make any difference, and they were all jabbed. But there were a couple of patients who refused, and they were not given the vaccine. So this shows another perspective of the madness, that when you have natural immunity, you're still being jabbed.
And there's studies that have shown that the jab itself damages that immunity. Natural immunity is the broadest diverse immunity you could have. Any vaccine attempts to mimic natural immunity. It can't do better. It can only mimic natural immunity. So we've used viruses, live attenuated, heat-killed viruses, to try and stimulate the same natural immune response. But now I hear people saying that the vaccine immunity is better than the natural immunity. However could an Elvis impersonator be better than Elvis? I can't understand their logic. The best you're going to get is natural immunity. Better than that is not
immunity. And that is how they are fooling our patients here. They say, well, it will protect you even better if you take the jab on top of having had the infection, which is absolute nonsense, because everybody knows, now people starting to realize, if you have the T cells and the plasma cells, these work and they have a memory. They have a memory of a previous infection. So that's when we all know that we've had these illnesses as kids, you know, measles and others, you know, that will give you a lifelong protection. And also, if you had a cold or influenza, I've had those at many, many, many times, and it's been all right. You know, I know my immune system is strong enough if I look after it. If I have a healthy lifestyle, I eat proper food, I exercise, I sleep, I take care of myself, and I also take care of my mind and my soul, then I don't need to worry.
Yeah, with the testing as well, I don't see how you could justify a vaccine passport for someone that you haven't really confirmed an immune response in. Now, we know that people that are immunocompromised that take a vaccine don't develop a healthy response to the vaccine itself, but you're still giving them a passport. Yet we know that we need to be testing for T and B cell responses to tell long-term memory to or long-term immunity. And these T and B cell tests exist, but are not broadly being used. So what we should be doing is testing people for T and B cell memory and issuing them with vaccine, instead of vaccine passports, issuing them with immunity passports. The immunity passport should be issued to those who have long-term immunity. And whether that immunity was come to through a natural infection or induced by a vaccine, you deserve a passport because you have long-term immunity. And that's how you would segregate society, if at all society needed to be segregated.
And we know that after roughly around 11 days, the immune system, they develop immune globulins, and it's called IG. They can be detected roughly around after 11 days. And in Sweden, it's not recognized having had the infection. It's only recognized if you have the jab, which does not make any sense whatsoever. And then you need, the passport will expire after 6 months and you will need a booster. Otherwise, you can't travel. And you can't now, Dr. Chetty, you will not be allowed to visit any events, any concerts, any sports events, or any pubs or anything like that, unless you got a passport. And so it is slowly being introduced. And our new Prime Minister, Magdalena Andersson, just recently said during an interview, an international interview, when because she became the chair of the International Monetary and Financial Committee, she said every country needs to be vaccinated so we can perform the reset, the financial reset. And so I think that this is a much, much bigger picture. And I think I wholeheartedly subscribe to what you said previously, that the Western world, they have caused themselves a great deal of trouble.
You answer that, and then I have a question. Yeah.
No, there is a lot more going on than vaccination. This has nothing to do with public health. It's a vaccine that has no safety, no efficacy, but is being mandated onto a population under the guise of healthcare. It has absolutely no health benefit. It serves two purposes. One is to curb individual freedoms. That's the main purpose of the vaccine. It's meant to curb your individual freedom. Now, your government was meant to protect your freedoms that your great-grandparents fought so hard to achieve. But now they feel that they are in charge of dispensing your freedoms, dependent on whether you're vaccinated or not. So they are looking to curb individual freedoms by forcing this illogical vaccine on you. The vaccine's the apple in the Garden of Eden. And the day you take a bite of it, things are going to change. Now, I think what they're looking to do is to introduce through fear a binary system of curtailing your freedom. So it's just a yes or a no. Are you vaccinated or not? And that will determine the extent of your freedoms. And once they digitize that freedom or that passport, humanity's lost the game. Once they put it onto your cell phone, they'll have a QR code and you've got to scan wherever you go. And it'll just be a green tick or a red cross. And if you got a green tick, then you'd feel like you're anointed. And you can go into any restaurant and do whatever you wish because you got a green tick. But one fateful day, it's going to turn into a red cross. And you're going to be told that's simply because you haven't had your booster shot a few days ago. And if you subscribe to this, you're going to have your booster shot and turn your red cross into a green tick again. But what you don't realize is that one day, you're going to have a red cross. And you're going to start arguing because you took your vaccine a day ago. And you should have had a green tick. But then they're going to tell you it's because you haven't paid your parking fine from last week. And then you'll realize you've lost your freedoms. So it's a way of getting us to subscribe to a system out of fear and, of course, trying to exclude the unvaccinated. So now we're going to take our vaccine and we all put our green ticks on Facebook that we're so excited that we got this green tick. It elevated my status in society unnaturally. And so I'm so proud of that. But what I don't realize is that I'm slowly selling my freedom away. And once they have that system in place, we're in trouble.
I'm not sure you can see this, but this is a vaccine passport sent by someone to me, and that expires after a few months. And the carrier is able to visit certain events, but he will also need a specific booster. And so it really shows that this is much wider than most people could ever understand.
Yeah. My next question is actually, it's addressed to you, but both. But I'm thinking so much about the doctors. How can they go along with it? I mean, isn't that like one of the first thing a doctor learn about natural immunity? And now I have so many people from the inside who sends me information. So I saw a lot of texts that doctors actually put out, and they were it wasn't very, very nice words about the unvaccinated people. And they think that they, it's their fault if they die, and they should pay their care by themselves. And so much into this.
Yeah, I can answer from the perspective as a specialist, having worked in five countries, and the latest was New Zealand, where my colleagues were wonderful, but many of them were scared to lose the jobs. I passed 60 a few years ago, so to me it didn't matter. The principle, you know, about my body, my rights, and also the Hippocratic Oath made it very clear to me I could not go along these lines. And when I was sent the letter that you're committing a crime if you remain in this hospital following this specific date, it was clear I had to leave. My colleagues didn't, because it's always about financial matters, and some colleagues did not have the option to go back to their own country. As my wonderful secretary from South Africa, she is now absolutely devastated because she has no money, no job, and she is in a new country. But I would say that there's a lot of incredibly good doctors, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to take those steps and step outside the system and actually be prepared to lose the jobs. Like me, I lost my job, but it wasn't a big deal for me. I had another option. And even if I lose my job now, so be it. I can go back to farming, and I can help people anyway. That is my duty as a human being.
Here in South Africa, I think there's also another side to that at play. Here we haven't had the censorship and the restrictions that other doctors around the world have faced. So the general practitioner here in South Africa has remained the king of his kingdom and was given the choice to treat patients, or the freedom to treat patients. Yes, there were controversial medications like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. They were never really banned. They were pulled off the shelf, but whatever stock doctors had, they were able to use. So there was never any reason for a doctor not to treat a patient or attempt to save lives. But of course, we have a large contingent of doctors in South Africa that still punt the vaccine and still believe that there's no early treatment that actually works. So it you've got to wonder why that is. And I think that's simply because of the pharmaceutical companies and the influence that they've had over healthcare over the last 50 years or here in South Africa, medical aids, medical schemes have come to be the keepers of healthcare rather than your doctor. So if I give a patient a medication, the medical administrator will decide whether he's going to pay for it or not, and then gets in touch with me to say, we don't cover that medication, but we cover these, so change it to another. So this has been something that's been a battle with the pharmaceutical industry for, I'd say, the past 40 or 50 years, that they seem to want to dictate how doctors treat their patients and to what latitudes we can go to save lives. If I do a procedure on my patient in my consulting room, the medical aid will not cover it simply because they feel it should have been done in a hospital setup. Now, a hospital setup would have been 10 times more costly, but they don't seem to care about that. So for a long while, I've understood that the economics seem to dictate how doctors operate. As well, the pharmaceutical industry has spent over the past 50 years lots of money educating doctors on how to punt their products. So the marketing involved has been there for this past 50 years. So we've taken away the doctor's ability for lateral thought. He follows what the pharmaceutical company tells him to do. I've been accused many times of using medication from Noah's Ark, yet my accusers don't realize that they're here because of Noah's Ark. I trust the old medication because we know how it works. We know the side effects. We know how we can use it off-label in different settings. But then the pharmaceutical reps comes by with a whole lot of pomp and ceremony about this new drug that they've discovered, and it does all these wonderful things. And I've never seen the benefits to it, because a few months down the line, we're usually getting some urgent medicine safety leaflet to tell us what it's doing and where we shouldn't use it. And I would have thought that would have been information given to me from the onset. So I'd rather wait for other doctors to try these new novel treatments and fail with them and get the relevant information before I decide to try it out on my patient. So I think a lot of the doctors have just become sheep and just toe the mainstream line. They don't look to all the other information. They will only read mainstream journals. So these are the A-grade students that buried their heads in books and never looked around them. And I don't think we can expect too much from that kind of breed of doctor. So it's the doctors that are willing to step outside the box, think laterally, and have a healthy respect for their patients and take time with their patients. Those are the doctors that are actually seeing the light. Those that treat patients like numbers and just get through numbers every day are just going through the motions.
And I would also like to comment about all those who have died over the last couple of years due to the vaccine side effects. If we look at the Senator Johnson, who presented the data in front of the American Senate just recently, he showed that there's roughly around 25,000 Americans who died. And a low estimate, when you look at numbers, reported to various vaccine adverse events in US, we know that probably only 1% are reported. Maybe if it's a little bit more positive, it's 10%. There has been calculation estimating that these numbers of deaths should be calculated by using a number by 31 to 100. So that means that 25,000 could be anything between 31 times that or 100 times that. In the European Union, we had recently, a few weeks ago, roughly around 32,000. I think the number now would be certainly about 35,000. So if that's 1% reported, you can imagine how many people that has suffered. And according to FDA CDC in US, any drug that caused, let's say, five deaths will get a black box ticked. Any drug that caused more than 50 deaths will be pulled off the market. So, and as many scientists have told me, the vaccine is not a treatment. It is not a drug as such, and is still a phase 3 trial because it was emergency approved. So there's a lot of these, but I think our hearts should stretch out to all these people who have actually died.
Yes, with the vaccines, if we could call it that, there's been a lot of manipulation of wording. Now, they call it a vaccine, yet it doesn't stimulate any notable immune response. So it's not stopping infection, it's not stopping transmission, yet it's classified as a vaccine. It claims to prevent severe illness and death. That is neither a prophylactic, that is somewhat a prophylactic benefit and a treatment benefit. So my treatment intervention prevents severe illness and death. And I do not expose the entire planet to my treatment. It's reserved for sick people, and only they could experience the side effects. So I think it's very disingenuous in the classification. So you're neither a vaccine, nor a prophylactic, nor a therapeutic. So how do we evaluate you? So now you're getting, you are claiming to be a prophylactic therapeutic, but you're calling yourself a vaccine. So you can avail yourself of the leniency of how vaccines are assessed compared to therapeutics. So I think it's just one big play on words, one big change in strategy, and it's all to get a vaccine emergency authorized to make sure that the planet gets it.
If I may, sorry, and Dr. Chetty, I have over the during the whole day been thinking a lot about what is the main message from my part or from our countries. That would be a more spiritual message to people out there, because we are going through in the world, from South Africa up to the North Pole, is that we are increasingly polarized. My nurse in New Zealand told me I can't visit my mother and my sister because they tell me that we don't want to see you because your kids haven't been jabbed. Fathers cannot see their sons and mothers cannot see their daughters. I know grandparents that are not allowed to see their grandchildren because they have not been jabbed. So this is polarizing increasingly. So we are being alienated and we should not allow that. We should allow ourselves to rise up and be more conscious about what's happening to us. This is a worldwide phenomena. And this is about being spiritually awakened. And actually, we've been asleep far too long. And I'm sort of stretching out to all of you out there. You're not alone. You never walk alone. You know, the Chinese proverb said, you know, that the dragon doesn't rise with the wind, but against the wind. And we are against the wind, but the dragon will rise. And I think that this is incredibly important because so many people now, particularly around Christmas, cannot meet because they are living under fear and are being told that you're not supposed to see him or her. So it is incredibly important to listen to my colleague from South Africa and all the others who are telling us that this is really what is going on. And we shouldn't allow ourselves to incarcerate old people. Old people, Dr. Chetty, died in Sweden without being treated, and they were treated as terminal cases, and they received midazolam, and they died in care homes, and they wouldn't be taken to hospitals. In New Zealand, my GP colleagues refused to see patients physically. They would only provide assessment through video calls. And I thought that this is unbelievable. They should really be struck off, not me.
That was actually the next thing I was going to say, that I know that both of you, and actually we have that in common, that we believe in something bigger than ourselves. And I think that is a part of the solution. I don't know how, but it is.
I think exactly. Yeah. Exactly, Zoya. And I think that's what's coming to the fore. I'm a very spiritual person, and I recognize that every single individual around me is unique. I don't put anyone into groups. I try and see every one of my patients as an individual with their own unique set of limitations, aversions. So everyone needs to be assessed differently. But the world has been divided into groups, be it religion, be it race. It's all separated and divided us, and those kind of divisions stop us from seeing the individual. Science as well looks for normal, but there's no such thing. Normal entails a group of individuals that are the same, but none of us are the same. So I'm always looking at blood results that say the normal value for this is such, the normal blood pressure is this, the normal glucose levels that. And I always look at that term with a wry eye and think there's no such thing. We should start using the word average. The average glucose level is, and the average blood pressure is, because using the word normal is what creates abnormal. And if we stop using that word, then abnormal will not exist. And I think that is the big problem. we try to look at each other and find similarities. But the similarities are not what humanity wants or needs. It is to understand the differences and the uniqueness in every individual. And I think that's where the power of humanity lies. But from our birth to our schooling to going through university to our vocations, we are not allowed to be ourselves. We must fit a certain mold. And I think Corona is here to disrupt all that. Any system that is built on poor foundations is going to break. And be it healthcare, be it education, be it your family. If you don't have a solid foundation, it's going to crack and break. But that gives us an opportunity to build anew. And I think that's where we need to look. We are dealing with systems that were put in place more than 100 years ago. The economy, education, all these kind of things. And these systems were designed to benefit a few at the expense of the majority. Now, over the past 100 years, we've developed a middle class and we've gained our freedoms, but we haven't changed those systems. We've kept tweaking them to try and make them a little more equitable, but they're not. And so they're failing us. So this gives us an opportunity to break everything down and start afresh with systems that are more equitable, more understanding, that take into consideration the diversity of the planet we live on. And so there is an opportunity with COVID. So some of it's inevitable. It will divide, but it will enlighten too.
And I wholeheartedly subscribe to all that, and because we will not fall prey to negative thoughts and actions and start fighting and creating war and all that. It's an illusion, it's Maya. Because we should actually, in our hearts, be grateful for the darkness. We should be grateful for the challenges we all face. Because without that, we would not evolve. We would not change. We would still drive the same car. We would still go to the same bank. We would still think that, you know, I need more money. Because we ultimately will have to accept the fact that these systems will change. They have to change. And ultimately, I have to change. We all have to change. And I don't need all those gadgets and all those things. I need to accept the fact that it might all go. Now, they claim, the World Economic Forum, that you should not own anything and we will provide for you. But I would say that the New World Order, if we mention such a word, which I don't subscribe to, it means that the world will change, no doubt, following these events, which are historical, no doubt. Then it means that the population will also have to adapt and change. It's evolution. But I think that we will rise like the dragon, and we will spiritually rise and become more mature. That means that our consciousness will also ultimately rise.
Yeah, it's Christmas Eve, my gentleman, we talked about this spiritual thing and that it is a part of the it is the solution. I mean I'm sure, and like you said there also, Dr. Shankar, about the from being small in the school, we're like divided from learning to trust ourselves, and like you were into, Marcel, is that without all this darkness we can't learn anything. I mean, it's we're evolving. We need to. This is it doesn't feel fantastic, but I know it is an opportunity for us to actually learn. And
I agree with that, because when I divorced, when my son committed suicide, when my biological mother died, when I was in isolation and all those things, we have all suffered. But of course, I did change. And ultimately, I had to change. Suffering does change you. It's when we come out at the other end of this dark tunnel, we are more mature. We have been a bit more enlightened. And so with that experience, we can rise through the ashes as the phoenix bird and change and become something more beautiful, because that is what it's all about. And there is no simple solution.
Yeah, it comes down to faith. If there's one thing that's going to get us through this pandemic, it is faith. And I think it's faith in yourself, in your abilities, and we should stop looking around us too much. When I look back at South Africa, and my wife reminded me of this, I was very involved in the freedom movement in the 1980s. And today, we sit with a democracy that has a lot of issues. We've got a lot of problems with government. We've got a lot of corruption. We've got a lot of social issues that have come from this. And sometimes I stop and I look back and think, did I do the right thing fighting for freedom? Is freedom all that it's cracked up to be? But I've got to remember that when I look back at that time, there were a few of us that put our lives on the line, and we fought for freedom. But today, every single person in South Africa enjoys the fruit of that labor. And we're facing the same situation globally. So we don't need to get the entire world to rise. The 10% of this globe that are brave enough to stand up and stick their necks out will change the world. Because we're fighting less than 1% of the population. It's less than 1% that are trying to do this to us. So all it takes is a 10% of bravery. And of course, when we win that war, everyone will actually enjoy the fruit of our labor again. So I think we must remember, we don't stand alone. We stand in faith with our Maker, and we don't need anyone else to be around us when we do this. So Christmas is the time of year where we should be coming together. With Omicron in the air, we have nothing to fear. Santa's brought us an early Christmas present, and we shouldn't leave him standing at the border post waiting for a passport to get into our country.
And we all came together, all three of us, to send out this gift to all of you out there, because it is important.
Oh, I feel very, very touched by this at this moment. I mean, yeah.
It is once again nature showing us that it's all pervading. My interest in nature has always been that it's where God does his work. And if I understand nature, maybe I'll understand his plan and his rules and how to chart a path, knowing what to do and when to do it. And here, nature gives us the best vaccine we could ever hope for. So it's upstaged all the vaccine manufacturers. This is a vaccine better than Pfizer could ever produce. We refuse to acknowledge a God-given natural immunity for 2 years, but now it all seems irrelevant. With the Omicron in the air, if this spreads like it looks it would, and grant us all immunity, we'll get to that herd immunity that the vaccine promised, but would never get us there. So the vaccine is our false savior, and people are going to realize that.
And I think also that we should not be fooled by all the systems and the media. This reminds me about Nelson Mandela. I always watched, and I was an admirer of him, having spent 30 years in prison. And he was asked a question by an American journalist that said, "Why don't you support America against our enemy?" And Nelson Mandela looked at him and said, "Sir, he is not South Africa's enemy. Why would we treat him as an enemy? He is not our enemy." And that is a good answer, because it is so easy to be conquered and to be pulled into these systems. And we should stand firm, should stand our grounds firm and oppose that, because there is so much misinformation and disinformation. So we should remind ourselves about Nelson Mandela. No, that is not our enemy.
Oh, I think it's a perfect ending. I mean, we could have a discussion forever and ever, but I think it's a perfect ending, like I said. And thank you, Dr. Marcel, and thank you, Dr. Shankara.
And thank you for having me.
Yeah, I mean, both of you. So, I mean, thank you for what you are giving us. It's a perfect Christmas gift.
Zoya, to all your listeners out there, there's something that I think people need to understand, humanity needs to see. We all pray and we all have faith, but I think we need to recognize that our Maker is all around us, and He resides in every single one of us. Yet we see fat and thin and black and white and all the different things, but we don't see our Maker. And if we just strive to recognize Him in every person around us, that'll make us better human beings. You can't harm someone when you recognize your Maker in them. And so I think we need to realize that every single one of us are made in His image. And when we look at everyone around us, recognize your Maker in them. He's there and watching you, even in the guy you dislike.
Thank you.
Okay. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, all of you around the world.
Merry Christmas. Yes, to everyone. Happy holidays.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you.